Okay, we're holding on the closing daf of Maseches Kinim, Perek Shlishi. Continues the Mishnah today on the Chof Hei, which is really daf Hei in Kinim. Remember that yesterday we had a machlokas between the Tanakhama and Ben Azai, whether the number of pridim that the woman would have to bring in the case where she was koveya her neder to come to, again in Rashi Pshat, koveya the neder means that she was koveya to come together with the same oila that was being brought with her chova, so that she would be bringing a korban gadol of three birds at one time. That's a carbon oila. I'm supposed to bring you something, of course I forgot the article. Sorry.
I promise
you. Sorry. I'm thinking all the time, what am I forgetting? Okay, so according to the Tanakhama, this was a machlokas that was dependent on the shitas we had before. According to the Tanakhama, what's koveya, the nature of the min, is the chatas, always. So even if initially she had brought the eila that she was bringing from the min that was not the same as the chatas that she's about to bring, and remember the case is we don't know which one is the eila. We don't even know whether the first carbon that she brought actually worked out to be kosher, because the Kohen doesn't remember what he did. It may well be that that original carbon was kosher. At least the eila maybe brought all the mala. So the eila was already kavua. It was kavua now in a way that's different than the chatas that she's going to bring. According to the Tanakhama, that doesn't make any difference, because lemaisa, we would have to be kovea the oila in terms of the chatas and not vice versa. Which means that now, anyway, she's making up. Remember, she's bringing six different predot just to make up for her ola, because she's not sure whether her ola consists of two bnei yoina, whether it consists of two torim. And besides that, she needs to bring two for the eila that was part of her kain stuma that was going to be brought originally with her chova, her chatas. So there's always an ability to link the chatas that I'm going to bring now, whether it's a ben yon or whether it's a tor, with one of those olas. And that's not the question. So according to Ben Azai, however, where the eila is koveya, if it was brought first, and over here that's very possible, the chatas may have been possible, the eila was brought lamala. I have no idea what it was. So I'd have to bring two chataot according to him, because I need to match up the chatas with the eila that was brought together with the kain stuma. You see? So it turns out that according to the Tanakhama, she needs six predot for her ola, plus the ola of her chova, plus one chatas, which is seven altogether. According to Ben Azai, you need eight korbanot, because she also has to make up for the possibility of the second chatas. So she'll have to bring both the Torah and the Ben Yona as the chatas. Okay? Now this turns out to have a metaphoric parallel. And what's a metaphoric parallel? Om Rabbi Yoshua, this is metaphorically similar to the interesting machlokas about seven or eight that appears in the sugya of what is the advantage of being dead for an animal. This is fascinating. Because, it's interesting, last night I had a major issue in my home because my daughter, who plays stringed instruments, my little one, was devastated to learn that the strings are made of animal guts. Now, she's very much an animal rights kind of person. Animal guts is just, I don't know, she's not sure she wants to play stringed instruments, and maybe metal string guitar or something. This mom is the sugya over here. Now, the other kids tie it to her that, on the contrary, I mean, the lifespan of this animal is minimal, right? Now that the guts have been turned into a string, this animal is going to be singing for many years. And its voice will be heard throughout, and in the most beautiful ways. I mean, it's a lot nicer than a moo or meow or whatever. So this is exactly what Rabbi Yeshua is pointing out. An animal, when it's alive, has one voice, which is not very pleasant. But tishu mate, kolor shiv'an. When it's dead, it now turns into seven voices in the orchestra. Ketzad kolor shiv'an. Look, it's got two horns. It's two horns. Turn into two horns. L'shtei chatzotzot. It's got two shokayim of thighs that are easily turned into a nice Japanese flute, right? That's l'shnei chalilim. And then you've got the skin becomes a drum, or ola tof. So listen, this animal may live on in the beetles, and you know, then you've got a charakim together with the mammals, you know. And then you've got me'av, l'nivalim. The strings of the navel are made out of the me'ayim, and the b'nei me'av, which are the guts, are used for violins or for kinorot. They use thinner strings. So there you go. So that's the sheet that it holds seven. That would be seven connected to Tanakama, six eilos and one chatas. But then as a sheet that was shmona, she yesh omrim, there's indeed a sheet that it holds at kolo shmona. What's kolo shmona? Af simro lasot chelet. The wool of the keves is used to make chelet. So what the heck does that have to do with it? Ah! The treles is a musical instrument. Because the treles that we're talking about over here, that was used to make the me'il of the Kohen Gadol. The me'il of the Kohen Gadol, the rimonim that sing, are built in to the treles in some fashion. The locus precisely how, but it's built into the treles. So therefore we'd have to include, in terms of its voice being heard, we'd have to include also the treles. To do the Rambam in detail, I don't think is kedai. Well, just point out that let me first finish this. Rabbi Shimon ben Akasha Omer, Ziknei Amei Haaretz, Kozman Sheim Maskinim Da'atan Mitarefet Aleihem. People whose life has been basically dedicated to Amei Haaretz. So their life really involves a physical, mechanical universe filled with its imaginary constructs. So the older they get, and the less connection they have to these constructs, because they simply don't no longer have the bodily tools and the hormones to supply them, so they become meshuggah. Then their das, it becomes now, it's mitaref. It loses its place.
Shlemar. That like Sharon?
No, I think actually Sharon is doing quite well. I mean, the man is a genius. Let's not, he's certainly not Tiruth. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's very armumi in doing it then. Shenemar meisir safa l'ne'emanim. V'tam zekenim yikach. So on the one hand, we find that old age is now viewed over here as the removal of the taste of zekenim and the ability to speak, even to those who we can use it as noamim. These were people always used to give good speeches, and now they sit there stuttering and wondering what they were about to say. Richie, you would have loved this part.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, it's talking about, you know, exactly what you tell me all the time. You're in the middle of giving a speech, you can't remember what you're talking about. However, ziknei Torah enokin. And the cause manche maskinim da'atam mityashevet alayhem. They become more miyushav in their da'at. Now, this is very interesting because the Gemara in the Zvachim, it all talks about this issue. And over there it says mittosefet alayhem. Over here it says mityashevet, not mittosefet. Seems to be a machlokas. The Orach Chaim says, there's also a drushes around that says the same thing, that the pshat over here is that nobody is going to suggest that in old age the man becomes more creative. Because indeed the creative period of a person's life, even in terms of his intellect, is when he's younger. However, when it comes to Ziknei Amei Haaretz, the loss of the creativity is a loss of connection to the only thing that mattered. And therefore, being as in a sense their das was always an ad hoc response to whatever was attractive, when there's no longer anything that's particularly attractive, they get bored, miserable, and just, you know, have nothing to live for, and so they become a turaf.
I recall elsewhere this, when I was born in a slightly different Russian, they had mentioned ziknei akum and ziknei of the Jews.
I'm not familiar with it.
What?
I'm not familiar with it.
Ziknei akum, when they get older, they lose their, they go down, and ziknei of the Jews.
I don't remember such a thing. So he says the Orach Chaim, but the pshat is, even though datam is not mit tosefet according to the Tana, It's mityashevet. Because there was a consistency in the application of what they may have been torn away from what they were doing because of their bodily connections and imaginations and fantasies. But as they get older and older, those fantasies speak less and less. They're mityashev. They settle down into the things that they've always been committed to. They're no longer torn away from it. Even if it's not mitosaf. Mashenkin, the Amaret has nothing to settle into because the things that matter to him no longer matter very much. There's nothing really to take there. There's nothing for him to be mityashev. According to this, the lotion of mityashev is very specific. He wouldn't have said mitosaf. Okay. What the machlokis is in terms of the brisa that is quoted as saying mitosaf, that we, maybe we should discuss in one of the later siyumim where we'll include the mishnayot, but we met it also.
Like the Chachamim tell Ahasuerus who were turned over, so our Shemarim like aren't in place. It was like anti-Midyashevet.
Yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, there's a very sweet mimer that is quoted by Rabbi Yaakov Yechiel Weinberg about that the thing that drives you crazy is constant change. You know, when you're being driven from place to place, and based on that Gemara, that's what Chachamim was saying, you know, we're no longer in our place, the Klal Yisrael is on Miyushav, and therefore, you know, we don't really have a sense of how to judge things properly. And they contrast that with the Moab and so on, that are Miyushav, on their Shimarim, so to speak. So he talks about that an ad hoc kind of life, which is Zikne Amaretz, is always associated with change. So Mamela, the older you get, the less connected you are to it, the more meshuggah you become. You're constantly, it's like being, you know, constantly a hippie. At one point, you finally, the drugs get to you. I mean, you simply go wild, you know. And no, there's a relief to that. There's not, no one thing to be mityashev in. When things don't work out, you move on. You know, you do something else. In the end, that something else, the person ends up a little bit crazy from. He's weird, you know. Mashain came where a person is dovuk to something that is nitzchi and always maintains the same structure. Now he's looking for chiddush within that structure. If he doesn't lose the structure, then he's not mitaref. He has what to be mityashev in. Shnema b'yishishim chokhma ve'orach yamim tivuna. So the older you get, the arichas yamim gives you tivuna, gives you insight. Hadron alar ba'med varim v'slika la mesechet kinim
be'ezrat Hashem.
Before we start the next Masechta, I will not go into the details. Decided not to go into the details of the Rambam. Why? Because I'm convinced that if I tested you on the details of Rashi, I wouldn't get 100% scores. So because of that, it's probably not good to start playing around and confusing things with other shitas. However, the other approach, which would deny that the first thing to be brought is necessarily the Chovah, and would deny that necessarily you have to match up the two members of a cane in order to have them be yotze your oila. Again, in a chovah, yes, obviously, that was the bishop said the fairish before, but since an ola anyway is completely arbitrary, you could have separated them and said, I'm going to bring one Torah and one Benyona. What's wrong with that? But I'm going to bring one Torah. Don't bring a Benyona. Bring one bird. I mean, there's nothing in the ola that really links the two, except the fact that you said I'm going to bring two. So if your das wasn't, there has been the same two, who cares? That's how he sees it, apparently. So according to him, the complicating issues over here are much different than the complicating issues of Rashi. The kava, the pirsha nidra over here, according to him, is not the min, but the actual bird. This one is li'ela, or this one is l'chakas. Which is a whole thing that never entered into our considerations. We dealt all along with it's being a king's tumah. So we don't have to worry about that. If you're mafarish, which is the erla, which is the chatas, use your imagination. And you can see what it is that happens. And the kavah, according to him, is not the sense of linkage to the chovah, but rather the definition of the min that you want to bring. Which is a given, according to Rashi, in the earlier chat. Okay? So because of that, you can easily see what you're going to have to address in a case where you don't know what you brought, because you already have now the kviyut, which it adds an additional layer of suffix that has to be addressed, and it works out that you can address it in this with the same numbers.
So I understand that Kavach v'zakenim is described as kamahat parka ot avarva.
Adu'ale is the word.
Adu'ale.
Yes, the high God.
Right, so he went through, that's the modern word for adventures, right? But we're giving you respect for the fact that he went through.
Right.
Since even though Ziknei Akum, it's not a Sharpat Ka'ot.
Right.
Rabbi was saying he goes through a lot of different episodes, but there's no connection to it.
I did say that, but I said that in the context of Tiruf. You're saying it in the context of Zikna, that's Mechubah.
Right.
I think that's something else. There's a beautiful, before I forget, there's a beautiful pshat. I forgot who said it. That Aliba, I might even have been in the Aruch Chaim, but Aliba, the approach of the Aruch Chaim, that, that it only means good yashev, not the mitzosav. No, that wasn't dependent on that. He said, it says, V'kovei Hashem yachlifu korach. V'kovei Hashem, even though they're no longer young, right? But in other words, other people will get tired, but V'kovei Hashem yachlifu korach. So I forgot whose pshat it was. But V'kovei Hashem yachlifu korach, the one who becomes now more of a V'kovei Hashem has paid for it in exchange. The chiluf of it was his kayak. So it's Torah Mateshet Koforshavada, right? So in other words, he's machlif, his desires for being a Kovei Hashem, and because of that, he's not affected by the passing of his desires, but they never defined his life for him anyway. Yeah. Okay, it's done. And, no, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
That Gufa going through many different adventures with the Ziba of what that was the honor.
No, that's what reminded me of it, because the... There's Ein Chacham Kebala Nisayon, goes the Patri was saying, right? And that's like I don't know if I mentioned it here, it made a very deep impression on me. I was at a Beit Avel of my cousin who lost his daughter, young daughter, and he told me, he said it was one of the Rebbes, again, I forgot who, that it says in the Gemara, Dat Kanita Machasarta. Once you have Das, you know, what are you... What can you complain about not having? And das is worth everything. But the Rebbe said to Shad is dat kanita ma chasarta. What did it cost you to get that das? And it's very similar to yachlifu kof. You got to pay. Okay, so then, and he related it, my cousin related it to Ein Chacham Kebala Nisayon. In other words, unless you have an experience or something, you could be middameh, but it doesn't really mean anything to you. So the same thing would be true of here of the zokin that I'm being mechabed. Okay, but nonetheless, you could still be miturach. You look around you. I mean, you see this all the time. There's brilliant people. They're out of their minds. But there's a lot in the peripheral Torah world. You know, I mean, not the traditional Torah world. They're literally crazy weirdos. Geniuses have lots of insights and so on, but mamish crazy, and that's the tiruf. There's no yeshua. There's no real structure for the mind.
The ultimate is lishkas being yeshiva lishkas agasas, so Edmund sitting in a particular place to achieve a yeshiva das and chacham.
This goes beyond dafyomi. I'm not getting into philosophy.
We're getting to the muck of the mikdash.
It's a new Masechta we're starting now.
Oh,
here we are. Okay, so now in Tamid we do have some Gemara, which probably is the only thing that saved Kinim from the dustbin of the non-Daf Yomi world. So, starting now at the beginning of Tamid, things are a little bit out of order here in the way that the Masechtos were printed up. But it would be nice to know Midos first, because Midos tells you at least the places we're going to be referring to, places that we really have no idea where they are until we get to Midos. And so we'll wait for that. And the truth is, Kinim is very much of a footnote, you know, in terms of what goes wrong. The point of Tamid and Midas, the Rambam says, Tamid really has in it no elements that are very much part of the Chochmah of Kodesh, because it's basically a story. Tamid is the story of the Seder Hayom in bringing the Tamid. That's all. And so in using this story, I mean, obviously it has application to our understanding of the halachas that are involved. But it's not constructed the way the a normal Masechta would be constructed. A long dinim, which have application to story. Here it's story that has application to dinim. Okay, so Bishloshan, the Masechta begins now with the earliest part that is needed for us to know to talk about the Tamid. The truth is, it could have started later, but then we wouldn't understand what's happening. Part of the Seder HaTamid, the way every single day things go, is the arrival in the Beit HaMikdash of the Mimuneh al HaParasot. Remember, there are very many Mimunim on different areas. So you have a Mimuneh on the Shomrim, you have a Mimuneh on Parasot. And that is a very important part of the Masechta, because before we did any avoda that was a one a day or twice a day kind of thing, we needed to do a pious. A pious is simply a goral of a certain type, which we learned about in Yuma. And the reason we did this pious is because, as we'll see, there were some rather tragic incidents of competitiveness in the Beit HaMikdash, in which people trying to get the same avoda to get their opportunity didn't hesitate at anything to get it. So it's not that much different than anything else, you know. And because of that, they did a pious. But in order for us to learn about the pious that began the Seder of the Mizbeach, as we're going to do Trumas Hadesha, we need to know how you get ready for that pious. Getting ready for that pious requires you to be up in the middle of the night to be prepared for the coming of the Mamuna, and you never knew when he was going to show up, because you didn't have a specific hour on an alarm clock, and therefore, that was the first layer of selection. If you cared enough, you got up mitzad ha-sofik, and even then it was a sofik if you would be, maybe included in the pious, but were you going to win the pious? You know? So there's lots of reasons not to get up. Maybe he'll show up later today, you know. You know, the guy who says the daf yom, he's never on time anyway.
8:15.
8:15. Okay, but who knows when 8:15 is? That's one of the questions that we have. And then, you know, and even if I show up, I mean, who's to say that I'm going to understand anything, that I'm going to be chosen in a pious? And so, therefore, we have our first layer of selection. But in order to get to that, I have to figure out where this guy is. I mean, is he like in Beitar somewhere? Actually, the Seder begins with the inside of the Beit HaMikdash at night. And that's where the Masechta begins, in the dark of night, when everyone is still asleep. And the first stirrings of the possibility of a knock on the door begin to enter into the heads of those who are sleeping. But not everybody is sleeping, you see. Because one of the mitzvahs in the Beit HaMikdash is Shmirah. And you'll notice throughout the description of the Avodah of the Mishkan, it says Mishmeret HaKodesh. Keeps talking about Mishmeret HaKodesh. Which for Parshas we use, Mishmar is a sense of, okay, you're on duty. But the simple meaning of the word Mishmeret is actually to perform an act of Shmirah. Now from there we derive that there's a mitzvah of Diraisa, of Shmirat HaMikdash. What would be the meaning of the Shmirah? If we take the context of the Psukim, the meaning of the Shmirah is to prevent a Tameh from coming into the Beit HaMikdash. You know, for someone who's puzzled from touching something he's not supposed to touch, and so on. Because that's where we find the context of Shmirah by the Levium, because that's where everybody was worried. Hey, what's going to happen to us? We're going to end up getting into trouble. You know, Kulanu Meisim, I mean, this is ridiculous, the place is dangerous. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides a Shmirah. Okay, that's the partial level, and indeed the Gra learns that that's innate in the mitzvah of Shmirah.
We will
get into that. But the Shomrim, meanwhile, the Shomrim are given defined places, which we're going to get into later, and we have to start with them, because, after all, They are the ones who are going to be opening the door for the Mumune on Apayasot, who is coming from elsewhere. He's entering now to begin the day's works. He comes from the outside. If you learn, like the Rambam, then the nature of the Shmirah, although it's very interesting, and you often find this, that the Rambam in the Mor Nebuchim expands on issues and includes deos that he doesn't hold in Megillah Halacha in Mishneh Torah. So indeed, in the Mor Nebuchim, the Rambam talks about the idea of Shmirah from Tuma, Knisa, Lazarim, and so on and so forth, something which could have application both in the day and the night. Halacha l'maisa, the Rambam paskins in Mishneh Torah, that the Shmirah is only at night. And indeed, all of the discussion about Shmirah here to Nidos are discussions of really nighttime Shmirah. And therefore, he says the inyan of this Shmirah was not any practical application at all. It wasn't really meant to prevent ganavim or anything like that. It was basically like the changing of the guards in Buckingham Palace. It was there as to show respect. And a place that is shamur, people have a sense of the respect of it. It's not nogea biyom, because biyom, it's full of thousands of people coming in. It lives its own exciting life. Things are happening, and it's everything that's being done is respect. It's all avoda. But at nighttime, when nothing is happening, the sense that a Beit HaMikdash could sleep is outrageous. It would be like Manhattan losing its lights. So Mamela, you need to have Shomrim at night. Now the Rush, who learns that the meaning of the Shmirah is what Shmirah always means. Remember that Lishmar is the idea of keeping in mind. So Shmirat HaMitzvot does not mean to do mitzvot. It means to keep. To keep them. That's why Lishmar is Mishnah, Zeh Mishnah. Lasod, Asiya, and so on. Lilmod, Lishmo, Akayim. These are different things. So Shmira, no, that's in terms of Zafira, Zachar Vishomer, because Zafira is also awareness. There you have Lotas and Ase. But in terms of Lishmo, Lasod, Lakayim. So the idea of Shmira is a Mishnah. Why? Because Mishnah provides a structure that allows you to remember and to know where everything belongs. So here too, says the Rush, the union of Shmira is to maintain awareness of. Okay, now if a guy would fall asleep, a good-looking guy with a little sailor's hat or something like that, you know, what would they do in the Beit HaMikdash? Oh, it's bitter. Oh, it's vicious. Oh, they would do a lot of awful things. And they would indeed light a fire, as we'll see. we're going to get to that. Water guns are nothing. I mean, hopefully we'll be able to actually establish a Seder here that is very similar to the Seder.
It's quite obvious what job in the basement this Rebbe would enjoy.
No, it's not true. I hate it. You're wrong. I hate it. I do it very reluctantly. No, that's a complete misreading. So in any event, Omiya, no, it's not necessary, dear President, unless you're using it for my macronim. We begin now with that idea of Shmira, which according to the Rush, I'm just saying, I'm sorry, I lost track of my words here, Zikli HaMeorot. So, according to the Rush, that the Shmira is the awareness, it has to be the Omubalayla. And he indeed learns that there's no difference in the Shmira, the daytime and nighttime. By the way, the yeshivas that are next to the Kotel Maravi, the story of those yeshivas started with a tremendous idea at the time of Moshe Montefiore, in which they collected money to re-establish the Shmirat HaMikdash. Because the question is the Shmirat HaMikdash nogea bizman hazeh? The taina was that according to the Rambam, that the Kedusha HaMikdash is never batel, why would there not be a chiyuv of Shmirat? And there was a fellow, Goloptov, who came to Yerushalayim from Hungary, I believe, who made this his life's work. He wrote a whole sefer of it, and he went around and collected an enormous amount of money, which then they had problems in actually implementing because of political issues. But the idea was that even though you weren't allowed up or even outside at the time, but if you built a kailal or something nearby that would be mishakef over the harabayit and so on, you could be yotze the union of shmira from the outside, maybe. You know, from even the outside of the harabayit, which is part of the question. And there's a whole argument about this. The Avnei Nezer has a tshuva that says you can't be shomer by definition. That which doesn't have anything to be shomer. In other words, whatever the point of shmira is, whether it's an act of honor or awareness or whatever, it still requires the pshat of shmira. Well, what the heck are you watching over?
Yeah, but why can't you warn people that they're tuma and they can't
Oh, so if you hold it, there's an Isser of Knisa, and the shmira was shayach to the Isser of Knisa, if that's so, then you could actually, according to him, perhaps be Mekayim the mitzvah shmira b'zmanazah. So anyway, this man was very successful.
So that's
the definitive sefer Hayom on the Mekomos HaShmira is his work. He put in, I think, 40, 50 years into the... I don't remember how to pronounce it. Gleptov.
Does Rebbe know that there is a group of people today called Mishmar HaMikdash?
No, I know there's Nemanei Harabai who are attempting to destroy it.
No, stand by the other Mishmar. They got a special hat.
For the purpose of Shmira?
Yeah.
That's it. They tell people.
To be Mekayim the Mitzvah of Shmira.
They stand there to warn people that if they go in.
Ah, excellent.
I always thought they were just being zealous, but I...
Okay.
I
did not know. That's very nice
to go in.
They stand there and they tell people. Under Jewish law, you can't go in if you're Tommy.
Okay, so all of these things we're going to discuss later. Begins the Halak of Mishnah.
Of the Halak of Masechta.
And don't forget the Seder.
Say
never just identify yourself as being from planet Earth. The Shlosha Mikomot HaKohanim Shomrim B'Beit HaMikdash. We'll see that there's different Shmirot. The Shmirot done by Kohanim, Shmirot done by Levim, and the Kohanim are Shomer B'Bifnim, the Levim are Shomer B'Bachutz in the Azorah. So there are three places which Kohanim are Shomer. Now Kohanim are Shomer, in each group of Shmira there are 10. 10 people. So this would mean there are 30 Kohanim that are involved in Shmira inside the Beit HaMikdash, and that would be the Beit HaFtinas, the Beit HaNitzotz, the Beit HaMoked. Now, the Beit HaFtinas was called after the HaFtinas family, who were the ones that were held the secret of the making of the Ketoret, and which particular Samim, particularly Ma'ale HaShan, which they had a Kabbalah on. And that was the place in which they would work. The Beit HaNitzutz, there's different approaches to Beit HaNitzutz. Don't get to the map yet, because when we go to Midos, we're going to deal with these issues. Not now. The Beit HaNitzutz is called Beit HaNitzutz either, according to some, because it was built to be open to the rising sun, and therefore always had a complete one side that was made out of glass, basically it was completely open, and the sun would come in there and brighten things up. And others are in the Beit HaNitzotz, was a place in which there was always a fire burning, a small flame that would be used to ignite the Bimakai in the mitzvah of Lahavi Eish Min HaHedyot, and it would be the basically Ner Tamid kind of thing to make sure that there's always fire available for the Mizbeach, or the Beit HaMoked. And then there's the Beit HaMoked itself. The Beit HaMoked was essentially a sauna, and the reason that you needed to have a sauna was because the Kohanim would be freezing because the big Dekuna were very light. They had basically no protection over their skin. It's like walking around in your underwear, you know, with a very light and thin kind of shirt, you know, undershirt. And that's basically all you have to wear. And you don't have any socks on.
And they're barefoot on the
They're
stone.
Barefoot on marble. Freezing. Anybody who has a nice Yerushalayim home knows that you put heating under the floor or you wear something on your feet because it gets cold. This is something that in America, you know, almost nobody takes that really cold for us.
So all this time we had the fan on, it wasn't to bother Yaakov, it was in order to train him.
That's right.
But the marble was heated underneath.
No, you couldn't heat the marble because there couldn't be a hefzik. All of these electric cables and so on that they tried to install, they came out against it. La halacha, they had to tear up the whole floor. It was a disaster. Something like the Rov HaYudi was always tearing up the floor. So the Kohanim, in order to survive, really needed a little sauna to be able to run into, warm up, and they would warm up, and then they could come out, and they could manage another couple of minutes of avodah, you know. Okay, so that was the Beit HaMoked. Now the Beit HaPtinas and the Beit HaNitzot, Hayu Aliot, those two places were built above. It's interesting that the bays seems to have gotten placed in the wrong place here. In other words, the Beit HaPtinas should be Bibeit HaPtinas, and then the Bibeit HaPtinas should be the Beit HaPtinas, because it's describing it. Mm-hmm. You know, but anyway, so the Beit HaPtinas and the Beit HaNitzot were second stories. Now, why were they second stories? Again, there's a number of different approaches in the Rishonim, but one approach is they were second stories because we have a problem of allowing people in the Migdash. We'll see that these people had to be mitchalef and they would sleep. Well, you're not even allowed to sit down in the Beit HaMikdash, you know, in Yeshiva Ba'azara. If these places and any place that was open to the Kodesh had the Kedusha of the Kodesh. So how were they allowed to do this? And therefore, they made it on an Aliyah. They were not Mekadesh the Gagin or the Aliyot, which is a whole question, whether they Aliyot Nitkadashu with Kedushata Azara, and therefore be allowed to sit or even lie down in those places. Others learn that the question of Aliyot over here is because the Derech of Shmirah is to be in a watchtower, in which it should be raised, and that's the derech of a shomer, that he's got a shlitah basically over the area beneath him. Now, according to that pshat, when it says the Beit HaMoked was a kippah, they learned that means that it was built on a kippah, even though it wasn't an aliyah, was raised through having a kippah underneath it. So it was sort of a Gothic construction, was supported on a kippah structure, and on top of it was the Beit HaMoked. Others learned the Beit HaMoked was indeed, as is mashmash, so many places, on ground level. Kippah simply means the structure of the Beit HaMoked was that it was built in with a kippah openings, and it was like an attic kind of place because it had lishakot on the edges, as we'll see. There were four lishakot there, and they opened up off of the central kippah. So it's basically an architectural issue that we're talking about. And the problem of Aliyot, about the Aliyot, Lonit Kadashu, are addressed in numerous ways. The Beit HaMoked being open as well to the outside through the Lishakot may have been chol, halfway down through the middle. And therefore the Shmirah and the sleeping that we're going to discuss later would have been done in the chelik that was chol. Chol meaning it only had the kedushat of the Harabayit rather than the kedushat of the Azara. And we'll see there are other issues that have to do with kedushah, which we'll get to at the end of the Mishnah. Now, harovim shomrim sham. The rovim, now some learn rovim means literally the sharpshooters. Wow. Right? From the lashon of rove kashat. So if you want to refer to a shomer, you want to talk about them in terms of the, how do you say it today in modern Hebrew? You know?
It's salat,
you know. So in other words, in a sense that he's he's a rover. We call him that al-shem, the shmirah, there should be literal shmirah, not that they carried weapons or anything. Others learn rovim means what it always means. Kiravya, remember, kruv is a kiravya. Rabia is the Aramaic word for children, or youth. So the rovim means that the ones that were used for shmirah were bedafka youth. Some learn, and there's a lot of discussion about how ridiculous that shot would be, but some learns it means below the age of 13. Because there's this perception that the kruvim were little kids. you know, they have this Christian perception because they have this obsession with certain organs, the Christian. So they've got to have them, little kids, so that they should be innocent. But Dafka, the Indian of the Kruvim, of course, was that they were sexually aware. The whole point of the Kruvim is that they were male and female, and that you could tell the level of God's relationship to Klal Yisrael by the level of the activity of the Kruvim. So on the contrary, to us, the Kruvim Dafka have to be youth who are active. And therefore, besides the fact that how could you give, this was done in La Halacha, how could you give the Shmir of the Mikdash to somebody who's less than 13 years old? If it's a mitzvah, the Arisa, then he has to be chayav a mitzvah to be Makayim. Okay, so therefore they learn that the rovim over here mean young Kohanim, which is a kavod. And we saw, by the way, in the Gemara that Rava gave an etza, to the Goyish HaKohen who wanted to make a korban. We shouldn't need a Beis HaMikdash. It's bana. So he says, get some rovim, basically, get some youth, because that's a kavod for the korban. And that was the whole idea of the Mishkan, is that it was youthful. That's the whole not of the Avir connection and so on, right? The Kruvim connection. So in terms... that's the problem. The reason that this is causing such an issue is because later on we refer to Pirchei Kahuna, who are about to do the Avodah. Now those Pirchei Kahuna, if they're also youth, then what's the difference between them and the Rovim? Why are we calling some Rovim and some Pirchim? Now, Pirchei clearly refers to adolescent, because that's what it means. Pirchei means that their hair is sprouting. So we're specifically talking about them in an adolescent stage. So then what would the Rovim mean? That's the argument, that the Rovim would mean even younger. From the Rambam, it's Mashus, the way the Chofetz Chaim explains in his Likutei Halachos, that the action is the same age, and we refer to Pirchei Kahuna when they are about to do Aveda. When they're not about to do Aveda, then they're just kids, Rovim, so to speak. Others learn that the Rovim are beneath 20 years of age. So, therefore, they don't do Aveda, and we stress only their youthfulness. The Pirchei Kahuna is still adolescent, but he's 20, which you often see. And therefore, we talk about the young Kohanim, so to speak. Okay, so the Beit HaMoked was a kippah. Ubayit Gadol Haya. It was a large complex, really, as we'll see in Midos. Mukaf rovdim shel even. And on one side, and now this is if you hold that it was built halfway b'chol, this refers to the inside. Some learn that half of it is not referring to the inside of Beit HaMoked itself, but to the lishakot that were built towards the outside, and this is a reference to those lishakot. Again, these are issues we'll discuss more fully in Midot. But in any event, what they had was the Yerushalayim staggered sukkahs structure, in which you have a stair-like affair, except that over here, these were bunk beds. So the bunk beds were staggered, and they were built into the wall. So the wall would jut out at different levels. It was like rovdim. And you would sleep on the staggered wall. And the Ziknei Beit Av, the ones who were the Memunim on the Beit Av that was going to do Aveda then, Yishenim Sham, they would be sleeping there to be ready. Umaftechot HaZarabi Adam, they held the keys. Pirchei Kuhuna, now these are the kids of the Beit Av that are ready to do the Aveda, so they would be over 20.
They were also sleeping there.
They would not get a bed. They would sleep on the ground. Ish ksuto ba'aretz, each one would sleep in his own clothes. Obviously, lo ayu yishenim b'gdei kodesh. They wouldn't sleep in b'gdei kodesh because it's aser to wear b'gdei kodesh, not b'shas avona. Ela hayu poshtim otam, minichim otam mitachat rosheyem. Now we'll see in the Gemara, you can't literally sleep on them. First of all, you got a problem of shatness, and you have a problem of the utilization of hegdesh shelo b'shas avona, and so on. It means next to them, like we use the same lashon by your tefillin. Tachat rosh hayam means next to your head. So that's again a question of shmira. Now the shaila is what these people particularly were doing. Were they ready for aveda, or were they chilufim of the shomrim? Many learn that these were the shomrim that we're talking about, not just that we're going to do the aveda the next day. And by the way, that leads us to the other question: is shmira an actual aveda? The Mashmaut of the Rambam is that you wore Bigdei Kahuna, B'Shat Shmira. which case he saw it not just as a mitzvah d'oraisa, but as a functioning mitzvah within the Mikdash itself, and therefore it was alike an Aveda, and you would wear your big dekuna. Umitkasim b'ksut atzma, but when they were sleeping, they would use their own pajamas. Ira keri le'echad mehem, and one of the problems, of course, of sleeping in the Beit HaMikdash is that you may become tamei in your sleep. Now, what do you do? Now, l'chora, the problem over here is a double problem. First of all, how are you allowed to go through the Azorah to get out? Because let's assume that you're bechol, right? The doors are locked. You have absolutely no, but you're not allowed to open. Part of the Shmira is the doors cannot be opened until you get the signal from the outside.
Like Walmart.
So, where the heart is.
The modern day temple.
Because they were locking their workers in and not letting them out until the morning.
Oh, I thought you'd been watching too many movies.
No, not at all.
The lady that had her baby in Walmart.
Thought you meant Basley Frankweiler inside the museum. That's what I thought you meant.
So if one of them was a Balkari, and then Shaila is, also, is how exactly would he be Tovo there? That would require walking through the Azara itself. So what happened is that there was a stairwell that went down to subterranean passages under the Beit HaMikdash.
From the Beit HaMikdash.
From the Beit HaMikdash. There was a winding staircase, which is called the Misilah, the Misilsal. And he would be Yotzei Vaholech Lo B'Misibah, HaHolechet Lo Tachat HaBirah. And there's a machlokas in the Gemara, whether the Birah is a particular area of the Beit HaMikdash, or the entire Beit HaMikdash is called Birah. It says HaBirah Sherachi Notili. And it would go underground. And there would be lighting in the subterranean passage, Neirot Dolkin Mikan Mikan, which would show him the way to the Beit HaTfilah. Achu Magia Le Beit HaTfilah, and there were a Madura, Haitasham, to keep things warm. Again, it could get awfully cold down there. Ubeit HaKisei Shel Kavod. There was also a Beit HaKisei Shel Kavod. Now, why in that? We'll see why is it called Kavod? V'zeh Haya Kvodo. Basically, you never knocked on a door or shook a handle. That was shelo b'chavod. If the door was closed, by definition, someone was using the bathroom. If the door was open, then it was open. You didn't go near the bathroom to see if anybody's in it, as is nohug in among people without kavod.
That's not a
anybody in there? Sorry? Sanitation system, of course.
Gentlemen,
this leads us to the question of why they would put a bathroom inside the Beit HaMikdash, even though it was underground, and the reason is very simple. If the guy is going to be Tovel, he has to urinate first. And that's because, unless we're absolutely sure that he ejaculates with a lot of power, which the Gemara talks about how young you are, the final test is, can you get your shoes on standing on one foot? Right? Then you're still a nar. But if he then will urinate afterwards, he's going to end up becoming tummy again, because of some semen that might have been left inside, and then he's going to... So this is la halakha. He has to first urinate, which is why there's a bathroom. Then he uses the mikvah. Otherwise, we're certainly not, for his convenience, going to provide him Zignei Beit Av as well. Anybody, le'echad mehem.
All the steps that they use this toilet.
That's right. Well, now wait a minute. You don't just stam use a toilet. You learn not to need a toilet. Yeah, that's the Yashir Koyach Lem Leshev Lamod Bebeis Amelech, as we find in Daniel. That's one of the Koyach Lem Lamod Bebeis Amelech. So over here, he used the Beit HaKisei Shel Kavod, Yarad V'Taval, went down into the mikveh, Alav and his tapeg came out and dried himself off, V'Nitchamein Kineged HaMedura, and then warmed up at the fireplace. Now, of course, everyone is bothered by the nistapeg. I mean, it's his business if he wants to dry himself off. He doesn't want, I mean, really, do we need to know that he dried himself off?
Is it his business whether he warms himself up as well?
That we could say we want to provide him the function, but I mean, that he dried himself off. So there's a lot of difference. Now, in Yuma, where it says that he dried himself off, the Kohen Gadol, as part of the Seder Ayom and his five tefillas, it says over there also nistapeg. Over there, the explanation is, according to some, that drops of water between the beggar would be a chatzitza. Over here, this person is not yet ready to do Avodah. Therefore, we shouldn't be worried about chatzitza, and he's obviously not going to be doing Avodah today, because he's a Balkari, even though he's a Tful Yom, he can't do Avodah today, he's going to have to leave. So why does he have to, for heaven's sakes, towel off? Who cares? Okay, so one shot is, doesn't say anywhere that they brought towels, does it?
So this is telling you to...
So that means, it means that you were allowed to use towels that were public property. And there was no problem of me'ila, in other words, there would be a lathe based in that would be ma'ila, and that this is something that is usable, and that you can indeed towel. That's one interesting approach. Okay, then he would go back upstairs. Bavi yashavlo etzel echav hakohanim, achyu asharim niftachim. He had to wait until the doors were unlocked. Yotzei v'holeichlo. And now the question is, what right did he have to go back upstairs? If he's a tfuyom is usher b'knisa to the area, and you know, once you get to v'chel and so on, you're, which is way outside of where he was in the Harabayit. So why was he allowed to come back up? If he was underground where there was no Kedusha, stay there. And indeed, we'll see later on in Midot that there was a door, according to one Shita, that exited underground, which is where that Shula is now, you know, Keneged the Kodshei HaKadoshim, underground. They just found a door there. That's the Teddy... I think they turned it into a sporting event now, but there is such a mandiyama. We're not following over here. But why was he allowed to go back up? And here there's some very interesting approaches. One approach is that the iser of a tful yom in the Harabayit was the takona that was made at the Shar HaChadash, as it's referred to in Ezra, Shechichu Bo Dvarim, and that was one of the things that they were Mechadesh. And they were only Gozer where they were Gozer, and they weren't Gozer on someone who became Tamei inside. That's one approach. Another approach is that when it says that the area was not Nitkadashu, it wasn't even Mekudash with the Kedush of the Harabai. How could that be? It was raised. And even if you all debate, I'm okay, if it was raised above that level, then it needed its own separate Kedusha, because it wasn't part of the Retzef of the Harabayit, and therefore the Kedusha they gave it was pre-Chel Kedusha. Another approach is that the Isser is only an Isser of Knisa, Lechel. So because the Chel is where you go through, but once you're inside, there's no Isser of Shehiya and so on as a Balkan. So they made a takana specifically in terms of the chel, not in terms of a knisa, if you're underneath the Beit HaMikdash, where there's no kedusha to walk back in, because you're not going through the chel. Okay? Alright. However, we'll learn it. He did walk back up. He wasn't kept in the basement. And when the doors were opened, he would leave. Now, Mishu Rotzeli Tromata Mizbeach, somebody who was interested in being Zocher to the Trumas HaDesha, he would have to be ready to act immediately, because as soon as they finished the pious, there was no time given, you had to go and do the job. And so, you could not come to the pious unless you were already tovul, that's if you're tovul. No one is allowed into Avoda unless he's first tovul in the morning. Not because he's tameh, but because he has chadas issues. So you're tovel, then you're nichnas.
Is it hadas from the last time you
was tovel? Yeah, hadas because the night time is hadas. You weren't doing any of it. Okay, and it's part of the din that we were saying, Ein adam nichnas lazor la'avoda elin kim tarbal. You have to be basic. It's regular tarbal. It's on their own to get fine. So you have to get yourself ready. So you needed to be tarbal and to be dressed in your big day kuna, ready to move as soon as you're doing the avoda. It's all in this area, which is not Mekudesh B'Kedusha Sazor. No, these are people that are inside. Out of the people that are inside, they have a right to choose up. So now, they would be mashkim. When would the Mamuneh show up? You could never know. Lo kalaitim shavot. I mean, yeah, there was a general time, 8:15. But basically, sometimes he would come earlier and sometimes he would come later, so you could never be sure. It was always kedai to get early to Daf Yomi, just in case that day they might start a little bit earlier. So therefore, lo kalaitim shavot, pamim shuuba mikrot hagever. Look, I mean, basically, he would come from krot hagever. But, you know, it could be a little bit early, it could be a little later. Now, exactly what the krot hagever is, we'll also see as a machlokes in the Gemara, whether it means literally the cock's crow, in other words, dawn, essentially, early dawn, or whether it was the sound of the individual who was appointed to be the cruise, the vecker, exactly. So the crier, the Beit HaMikdash crier. And then HaMumunah Bavadafak Aleihem, the Mumunah of the Payasot would come and knock on the door. And that was the sign that it's time to get moving. When he knocked on the door, they would open the door for him, Heim Potchulo, and he would immediately say, okay, whoever is ready, Misha Taval, Yavo V'Yafis. Let him come, and come means come into the Azorah, because the Hafasa was done in the Azorah itself. Misha Zacha, Zacha. Whoever was Zocha, he was the one who would be Zocha now and would get to work as the next Mishnah continues.
Is the Mamuneh calling?
Yeah.